Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We have something for everyone. National sports radio talents like the Fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like Wrestling Soup and the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. News and current event shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. And shows that'll make you think like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger. We've got you covered. You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
You know her from network radio, but now she's on the net and in your head.
Don't believe me, just watch.
This is the Fabulous Sports Babe on RadioInfluence.com.
Hey, it's me on the Babecast. Isn't that lovely? Listen, I don't even know what this is, but I keep showing up and doing it, so that's all I know. Now, we have a million things we have to talk about. One of them has to be football, because I'm crazy about football, as you all know. By the way, can I just say something? If you have to be, you have to be a fan of the Cleveland Browns to not be in the playoff picture. Listen, I'm not saying that your team is going to be any good, but as of right now, we have four games left. And just about everybody's still in this thing. I mean, even stupid New Orleans, they've only won four games. They're kind of in it. Do you know what I mean? And even Houston, they're going to be playing the Patriots. I have to tell you more about that in a minute. And we'll have to see. And I hate to say it, I would be very happy if the Buccaneers, I mean, it's no secret, I have to watch them. I just can't help myself. You know, I always watch the Patriots, but for some reason, I just watch those Buccaneers forever, and I don't know why. But they're like 6-6. If they had won five games, I would have been happy. Now they've won six and they still have two more games. I don't know about you, but I thought it was pretty good from what I've seen anyway. And let me just tell you something. Now, the other day, you're watching this thing on TV. And all of a sudden, Gronkowski goes down. And they put him in a cart and they take him away. And I'm sitting on my couch going, don't cry. Don't cry, you idiot. And then I look at poor Tom Brady, and he's looking over there, and you think, well, he's going to cry. Am I going to cry? No, you won't do that. And they put him in the cart, and they take him away, and you're thinking, he'll be gone for the next 3 years. It's going to be horrible. And the next day, he's fine. They said he's going to be like a little knee thing. And I'm thinking to myself, is Gronkowski turned out to be a fat pussy? I went, that can't really happen. I'm going to say no. But it kind of looks like he's kind of a fat pussy if he can't get this together. Now, I know he's not playing the last two games. I get that. But I'm thinking to myself, you better be back in action again because I'm not going to like it otherwise. That's all. We have things to do. Alex Marvez will join us. He does Sirius F. What is it? Sirius X. What is it? XM? Some damn thing. I don't know what it is. He's the NFL writer for Fox, which he does tons of that. He does video. He does everything. We'll talk to him a lot because he's got a lot of things, and we'll talk to him a lot about this. This is my Babecast. How fabulous am I with that? How are you? It's the NFL season, and, you know, I have to tell you something. All of a sudden, I realize there's only four games left. I'm not happy about that.
No, I know. And, you know, then we get our fill on bowl games and things like that. And, you know, you get football overload, and then all of a sudden, wait a second, there's no football. And there's that huge void in your life. And it's interesting. And by the way, I just want to say it's such an honor to be on with the Fabulous Sports Babe, an icon in the radio and entertainment industry. I'm telling you, you blaze trails for so many people in this industry, and I hope people understand and give you your due because you are that big a celebrity and you are that big a radio talent. Now, that being said,
Please go right ahead as you're doing this.
It does lead to questions about a spring league. And I ask you, Fabulous Sports Babe, do you think people would support it? I don't. I think maybe we get a little football overload. We go through it. I just don't know, you know, because that's really the only thing out there that would feed the appetite for it. But I just don't see how you put a credible product, something that even comes close to comparing to the NFL, on the field and just have the same type of impact.
But see, the same thing is the way that the NFL has done it is we do this in playoffs. Then we have, we talk about the playoffs in February, and then we're getting ready for the draft, and then every day has got something. Oh, it's time for everybody's going to run to Indianapolis. And every day we have something going on. So they have done it perfectly. So we don't have to worry about a spring league because we're so excited about. I mean, I sit down and I watch the NFL channel. Like, do I care about somebody that's out there that's like the ninth quarterback? But I'm over there watching like an idiot. And people say, what are you doing? I said, can't talk to you. I'm watching football. You know, and I'm over there watching this like I even care about these people, but I love it when it's on. And that's what they want.
You're right. And, you know, it's funny how everyone looks forward to the preseason, right? And we're counting it down in June and July. Then it's all of a sudden like the Hall of Fame game comes and it's like, wait a second. This is the preseason. We hate this. But they're so brainwashed of wanting to see anything that resembles football. They're tuned in. And you're right. The NFL calendar works like that. You know, obviously you got the combine, you got Senior Bowl, combine, owners meeting, draft, mini camps, preseason, regular season, and it goes year-round, round and round and round. And you're right. I mean, we're all like, you know, we're Pavlov with the dogs. We just wait for the bell to ring.
You know, one of the things for you is you're, I believe, senior NFL writer for Fox Sports, but you were with the Bengals and you were with Denver and you were with Miami. And was there a time, because when you think about when you started and then 15 years later, when you went to Fox Sports, did you say to yourself, I got to get the hell out of the newspaper because I don't think there's going to be a newspaper in 3 years?
Yeah, scary. But you know what? Now I worry about the future of digital reporting since all everyone does is aggregate. You know, they just take your reporting, they claim it as their own. And a lot of times, look, I can sit on Twitter all day and just read a headline and I know what's happening and I don't have to necessarily go to an online site. I mean, it looks like newspapers now might be better off weathering this because they still have that hardcore older audience that likes to have a newspaper in their hands. And you know, you have people who buy for the ads, quite honestly, that appear on Sundays, coupon flippers. I get 2 newspapers on Sundays, to be honest with you, save a few shekels here and there. But you're right. And you know, it was interesting back when I did the Broncos and I did the Dolphins and I worked against Adam Schefter in Denver and he was obviously one of the great reporters, but it wasn't unusual to take 12 weeks off. He would take the summer off, you know, and disappear, you know, recharge the batteries and then come back and work basically from, you know, late July all the way through, you know, the mini camps. And that was it. And then we were done. Now it never stops. You can work 365 days a year, 24/7. And there's always going to be some story, something that you can pursue out there that's going to be newsworthy to feed the mill.
You know, one of the things it seems especially that when you had to do a paper, you did this. Now you have to do Twitter, you have to do Facebook, and then you get around to the paper.
Right. And, you know, and the digital part of it as well, video. And you know, the reality is this, you know, look, I'm senior NFL writer. I'm 44 years old. Get off my lawn, right? Right. But it's true because, you know, millennials are digesting news in a different way than you did, than what I did growing up. I mean, this is just the reality of it. They're used to watching videos. They want things dummied down. They want the Bleacher Report format, which has been tremendously successful for them, stealing other people's material, repackaging it as their own, and sending it out as news. Good for them. You know, they found a way to do it. And you see more and more websites go into that rather than try to create their own original content. They simply try to just repackage what other people have reported or use the TMZ aspect of things. And that's, you know, and it's sad for journalism to an extent. There is still some great work being done. But quite honestly, I'm not sure how many folks are even willing to pay for it. You know, is really the deal there. I mean, how many publications can really send out a reporter to work on a project for 1 month, 2 months, 3 months? And then we're all dummied down, too. I mean, I don't know about you, Fabulous Sports Fan, but I honestly now, I can't get through a 2,000-word story.
Oh, no.
I'm sort of skimming, right? Mm-hmm. You know, our attention spans have just gotten to this point that I can't even remember the question you asked. No, I kid. But the responsibilities are just so different now than what it was. But, you know, I still think it's a news-based organization as far as newspapers go. And they're really the conduit. And let's not forget what the media is. It's telling you, it should be telling you what the legitimate things are going around your team and not getting brainwashed by a team website or things like that.
You know, Alex, one of the things about here is I look at the 4 games that we have left and we look at what Carolina has done. I think you were probably there when Denver was so good and they went like 13 or 14 games and then they lost like 14 and 15 and then they went on and just swept the Super Bowl. And I remember that. I think that was 98 and I like somehow I remember that. And yet I keep saying to myself, you know, I think it's great, but at some point they need to lose because if they don't, they're going to lose in the playoffs and go, what the hell happened?
Yeah, you're right. You know, and that's a sobering thing that happens to a team. They're forced to do some self-scouting. You know, and I think back to when the Broncos lost to the New York Giants 23-18, the legendary Kent Graham to Amani Toomer with about a minute left, and the Giants upset the Broncos. And Denver then lost the next week to Miami, but it allowed the team some time to regroup, and it took some of the pressure off as well. And I'll be curious to see how this Carolina team handles it if they get to 13-0, if they get to 14-0, and the media spotlight from all over the country comes on them. I mean, this is, look, Charlotte is still a relatively small town. They're going to start to have more and more media around them, and it starts to take on a life of its own. Players are asked about it all the time in their personal lives. It's friends and family. It's not just media that talk about it. And you're right, the teams that don't lose oftentimes don't take that second to say, you know what, we're not doing this well. Oh, but we're winning games, so don't worry about it. And you forget about the little things. So I'm with you. Maybe it is the best thing for the Panthers to have that. Of course, now we have to see what Ron Rivera, how he handles it as well. If you're 15-0, you've already got home field advantage locked up. You've got the division locked up. What are you going to do week 17? You're going to play your guys? You're going to risk injury? Or are you just going to sit back and say, you know what, we'll play for a half, and then if the backups can win it, great, run defeated. But if not, we're thinking about the Super Bowl.
I like the idea of losing the same way as the Denver. I always remember that because I think if you lose it, then you can remember what it was like and get it together, and then, you know, okay, we have to do these five games to win the Super Bowl. But I think if you go in and then you lose in the second game and you're in the playoffs and you're like, what the hell happened?
Yeah.
And I think, and one of the things about them, is it true that most of the team, with the exception, I think, of Seattle and Green Bay, that most of their teams are under 500 that they have to play against Carolina?
In terms of when, in the post, if they make
no,
the postseason?
I mean during the year. I mean, they've had to play, you know, they have to play their, you know, New Orleans and Atlanta and the Bucks and things like that. But it seems like most of their teams are under 500. The teams
I got
that
what
they've
you're
been
saying.
Playing, yeah,
yeah. I mean, you know, but I can't knock the Panthers for that. I think, you know, they looked to go to Seattle and do what they did. I thought was awfully darn impressive to beat Green Bay, and of course they held on at the end. That was pretty darn good. They did it at home. I mean, I think, you know, and they showed some resiliency against New Orleans. That was the perfect type of game that you could have gotten upset, right? Because, you know, before the game, you know that you've won the NFC South title. And you know, what are you playing for, right? I mean, your home field, that's about it. And the Saints are a pretty lousy team this year. But they went ahead and you know, they fell behind early, but they came back and won and showed some resilience. But, you know, I mean, the big question, I guess, is this then. It becomes this argument. Who can beat the Panthers in Charlotte? I mean, what NFC team do you get excited about and say, wow, if they have a rematch, for example, with Seattle or with Green Bay or Arizona or maybe Minnesota, but I'm not really buying them. I mean, who's out there that really we should worry about knocking off the Panthers?
You know, one of the things is we're getting ready and we've got like the four games that we talked about there. And I look at Carolina up there and I'm saying, okay, those are the six teams right now, but I'm not so sure those are the six teams that are going in after we play these four games. I mean, you know, Pittsburgh's looking at them and you know that Pittsburgh's going to do something. You know that they're getting into that playoffs. What they're going to be any good is not the point. But, you know, I have to say something. I live near the Bucks, and I'm like, I don't know what the hell they're doing there, but somehow they're involved. But somehow in there, you know, things are going to happen. You know, and you look at the Giants and you go, can the Giants do this? You know, there are four games left. Can something happen with that? And you just sort of wonder what's going on, because outside of Cleveland, if your team is there, whether you're Oakland or you're Philadelphia or what, your team actually has a chance to be in the playoff picture, at least right now.
Right, and you're looking for that team that starts to sizzle, right, in December. I'll give you an example, the 2013 San Diego Chargers. They get hot, they win four games, all of a sudden they're a force in the playoffs, they reach the second round. Carolina last year, you know, I mean, they at one point, they were 3-8-1. And then they get hot in December. They win their four straight games. They haven't lost a regular season game since. So we're all looking for that team, and I think Pittsburgh is an intriguing one. The one thing that hurts them, if they end up in a tie with the Kansas City Chiefs head-to-head for one playoff spot, that's going to hurt them because Pittsburgh lost at Kansas City earlier this season. But the Steelers are an intriguing team. They just have to get through the next 2 weeks. They're in Cincinnati, and then they host Denver. And after that, they're on the road against Baltimore and Cleveland, but they're not the most formidable of opponents this year. So we wonder about them. I thought for a minute that Houston was getting hot. Then they had a setback against the Buffalo Bills. J.J. Watt's got a broken hand. Not sure how that's going to affect his tackling. But when we look for this team, who's it going to be that gets hot? Who's, you know, in Seattle, there might be an argument as good as anyone at this point that they're the team that you don't want to play in the postseason because, Russell Wilson's out of his mind. Mm-hmm. You're going to get Marshawn Lynch back, but Thomas Rawls has been super hot. You know, more than 700 yards rushing, only six NFL starts. I mean, and the defense is starting to look like the Seahawks defense again. So that's probably the team you don't want to see. But if Carolina keeps winning and they get that home field, and if Seattle doesn't win that division, you're looking at a mess for Seattle when it comes to travel. because remember having to go coast to coast, how are they going to handle that? And Carolina may not even have to worry about them until that final round if they're able to get that far. And by then, who knows if Seattle's still around.
You know, one of the things when we talk about Denver, and you were there, you covered from Denver for some time.
Yep.
Peyton, they were saying he shouldn't replace Brock. I'm saying, how can you do that except Brock's been winning all the games? But how do you do that? How could you possibly say, okay, you're okay, but the other guy's going to run? How do you say that to Peyton?
Well, I think that's the reality of it. I do. And I, if you know, Peyton's been around. He's a big boy. You know, he's 39 years old, and he's seen everything in the NFL. And I think the reality is if Brock Osweiler serves this team better, I think they're going to stick with Brock Osweiler. And I've said this, I'll say it again. I think the Denver Broncos did Peyton Manning a disservice and themselves a disservice by bringing him back this year when you're going to completely change the offense like they did with Gary Kubiak. Mm-hmm. Trying to mesh two systems, Fabulous Sports, right? That's a disaster. It was a disaster. Peyton was never comfortable with the things that Gary Kubiak was having him do. Now you look with Brock Osweiler in, and all of a sudden the Broncos are running the football effectively. He's taking snaps from under center. He's moving around. He's making amends for a very leaky offensive line. These were things that weren't happening under Peyton. And with that defense, you don't need to put up 500 points a game to win, mm-hmm. you know? And that's the thing, too. He's gotten great support. But I think, you know, look, the reality is that Peyton, if I think this is all in Brock's hands. If he has a setback, and trust me, he very well could. You know, now teams are getting film on him. They're mm-hmm. looking, okay, what are the throws he likes to make? What are the ones that he doesn't? And are going to start game planning around that. So we'll see how he weathers that storm. But I think if you got the guy who's hot, I think they're going to stick with him in Denver.
You know, one of the things I look at Dallas, and I go, you have Romo, you believe in him, but no matter who you put in there, they're horrible. Can you get another backup quarterback that you can be comfortable with, or is it just Romo and that's all we care about? If you're the rest of the people that play on that team, you're like, it's Romo or nobody.
Isn't that crazy? And, you know, the thing about it, too, is that, you know, Dallas, they bought this virtual reality system, right, to try to help develop young quarterbacks. They brought Brandon Whedon back for a second season, and they thought that Brandon would be good, you know, in stepping in. And then he got nervous running the offense. He didn't play his best football. He got tight. And the Cowboys lost faith in him immediately. So they scrambled. They trade for Matt Castle. And the guy that you invest more than a year in Brandon Whedon, he's out. Mm-hmm. So then Matt Castle has to play catch-up with the offense. He's never worked with Dez Bryant before. He's never worked with guys like this, Jason Witten, et cetera. And the running game isn't going great, and the defense is good but not great. And all of a sudden, you're finding yourself in a deep hole. And so it's just been a mess in Dallas. I mean, they need to do a better job finding a backup quarterback for 2016. And maybe it is Matt Castle, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. Maybe Matt will be the guy that ends up there. Let's see how he does the rest of the season. Maybe, you know, they can re-sign him. I think Matt's days as a full-time starter are over. I think they need to draft a quarterback because Tony Romo's injury history would tell you that that's a smart thing. But the Cowboys also need to address the running back spot. And that's where they made a huge mistake. And Fabulous Sports, babe, I will tell you this. I think if the Cowboys had to do it over again and DeMarco Murray had to do it over again, I think DeMarco takes less money to stay with the Cowboys. I think the Cowboys raise their offer and they keep him in the fold.
Well, and wasn't it the other day that he said he doesn't – what was it that he said about Chip the other day that DeMarco said he doesn't shake shit or something like that, some horrible thing that he said about Chip the other day? And I said, well, things are not particularly well there in Philadelphia now, are they?
No, well, you know, in fact, you know, you have a couple of running backs who are upset. Shady McCoy doesn't want to shake Chip Kelly's hand before the Buffalo-Philadelphia game, and you have DeMarco Murray going to the owner on the team plane after you beat the Patriots, mm-hmm. after your biggest victory of the season, the thing that may put your team on track, and you're telling him how unhappy you are with your role in the offense. You know what? I mean, there isn't an I in DeMarco Murray, but I think they should add one. Maybe it's his middle initial, because that's got to be one of the most selfish, there's no way to describe how selfish and greedy that is for DeMarco Murray to go to the owner about this after your team just won a monster game.
You know what? There's a couple of things that I want to talk to you about, and one of them is about going to L.A. But let me just say, I saw Andy Reid the other day. I've talked to him a few times, and I looked at him, and I thought, you know, I really liked you when you were in Philadelphia, blah, blah. And I look at him, he looks like my grandfather now. He really does. I look at him, I say, he's like my grandfather when I was, like, 12. You know what I mean? I'm like, I don't know what to say about it. It's like he's tired and over it, it seems.
No, but his team's playing well. He's enjoying himself. I'm telling you. He's happy. He's got Alex Smith. Alex has gone more than 300 passes without an interception. The receivers are catching the football. They're able to run okay. The offensive line, miraculously, has gotten its act together. The defense is playing great. This is another team that's gotten really hot with six straight wins. So, no, I think Andy's having a bit of a resurgence this year because it was a trying time for him. You know, look, clearly he had his personal issues, a couple years ago with his son, you know, dying of a drug overdose and then leaving the Eagles. But I think he's got the Chiefs back to where he thought they could be. And the signing of Jeremy Maclin, you know, it's funny, again, we talk about things that you wish you could do over. Maybe the Eagles just should have kept Jeremy Maclin because they have not found a deep threat in their offense, and he has just been a total boom for Kansas City in adding some life to a receiving corps that didn't have a touchdown catch last year.
Alex, let's talk a little about the NFL and what's going on there. Stan Kroenke said, I'll do whatever you want to. The Rams are supposedly going there next year. They don't have a place to play, but I'm sure they'll figure something out. How does it look? Because it seems like they sort of don't want the Raiders to go there, and they're happy with the Chargers coming up there too.
Right, and I think you nailed the situation right there. Now, Eric Grubman, who's the NFL Executive Vice President, who's in charge of this project, he appeared on Bernie Miklos' radio show in St. Louis, and Bernie was a giant in the newspaper industry, wrote for the Post-Dispatch a long time, now he's full-time radio. And Eric spelled it out, that out of the three, they have, every city has, you know, San Diego, Oakland, St. Louis. They all have until the end of December to submit a proposal saying, okay, here's how we're going to be able to keep these teams. And Grubman said none of them are even close to being good enough to keep a team. I think you're right about the pairing between the Rams and the Chargers. Even though the Chargers partnered up with the Raiders to try to get a stadium built in Carson, California, the one that makes the most sense would be pairing the Chargers with the Rams, because the Rams owner, Stan Kroenke, already owns the land in Inglewood. He's already got everything approved. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a ready-to-build site, and he can get moving on that stadium. You're also talking about not having to realign divisions or switch a team from conferences, because San Diego and Oakland, one of them would have to switch a conference if that were the case. And here's the thing with the Raiders, and this is what I'd be curious to see what NFL owners have to say about this. You know, there is a stadium available across the bay. It is the Field of Genes, so to speak, Levi's Stadium. And, you know, Al Davis didn't want to work with the 49ers when they were getting it built, and maybe in retrospect he should have, and they should have shared the stadium. But this is what's happening now, Fabulous Sports Paper. I think the Raiders are the one holding the bag. And let's be honest here, too. If you don't want Mark Davis owning this team because he's not part of the billionaires club, because he's not, you know, he doesn't have super deep pockets, there's a lot to be said about maybe someone else owning the Raiders. Hint, hint, wink, wink, behind the scenes. So maybe this is a way to force Mark to have to look at doing some different things and maybe stepping away from the Raiders at some point as well.
You know, one of the things, I'm just going to say, for people who don't know this, Stan Kroenke's like the second billionaire in the whole. Do you know what I mean? People, they sort of see him as that guy, but he owns the Nuggets. He's got like a bazillion, sillion dollars, that Kroenke guy.
I know he does, and his wife actually has more, I think. You're talking like the ultimate power couple there. And, you know, look, I feel for the people of St. Louis. You know, you lose your football team once, that's devastating, right? You lose it twice, they ain't coming back, you know, and that's the reality of it. I mean, there's the only college football really is far away. It's Missouri. There's no city program that people, you know, really flock to, Lewis and Clark, maybe, I don't know. But, I mean, you get the point. I mean, this is a tough situation for the city of St. Louis, but I don't cry for the politicians there who went ahead and gave the Rams the type of lease where they could move. You know, but when they signed it in 1995 and they said you have to have a modern, up-to-date stadium by 2015 or else your team can move, and then you don't really negotiate trying to get this done until about a year or two ago, well, they did this to themselves.
You know, Ezra, do you want a drink of water, by the way, while we're having this conversation? I always feel like you should be getting a drink of water while we're having this conversation.
But I'm doing
feel
great.
Free. All right. That's all I wanted to know. Are you still the president of the Hall of Fame stuff for NFL?
The Pro Football Writers of America, unfortunately, have stepped away from that position. Well, actually, you serve your 2 years, and then you become an emeritus or whatever it is. And, yeah, dealt with media issues back when Roger Goodell was first becoming commissioner. And then I do vote for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I've done that. I'm the sit-in guy. Have you ever seen that Seinfeld episode where Cosmo Kramer has to sit in during the Tonys?
Yes.
Then that would be me. So I fill in. I've done this. I think it's 8 of the past 9 classes or 7 of the past 8. I lose track. But it's been an incredible honor, and I'm hoping to do it again in San Francisco come February.
Is it hard for you because there's so many players, and all of them are really good or they wouldn't be there, but you have to bring it down, and then you have to say, I've got these guys, but I think these other two guys belong, but I got to go with these. I mean, is it, it's got to be a hard thing when you get down to it, because it's not like I'm one of the people. You know what I mean? They're
right.
Really good people that are there, and you say, how do I vote for this guy as number four, but I can't vote for him as number six? I wouldn't know what to do there.
It's fantastic, but you know what? When you're in the room year after year, you sort of get a rhythm, right? People serve their time, and you realize, okay, here, there's this groundswell of movement for this guy this year, and they've waited long enough, and we're going to get them in this year. You know, one of the big things was breaking the logjam of the wide receivers.
Yeah.
That was huge, because year after year, Chris Carter, Andre Reed, Tim Brown were all canceling each other out, and that was extremely unfortunate. But, you know, as time went on, and you heard the numbers, and you realize, okay, it's their time. You just get that feeling in there. Jerome Bettis, it was his time. And then I'll give you another example. Sometimes you know that there's a great player who's coming up at the same position, so you got to make a push to get someone in. And Cortez Kennedy would be a great example of that when Warren Sapp was nipping at his heels,
mm-hmm.
because we knew Sapp was going to be probably, you know, would have got in as a defensive tackle before Tez, but Cortez Kennedy was unbelievable. I mean, you're talking NFL Defensive Player of the Year on a 2-14 team with the Seahawks back in the 80s. So I think there's that. You also know that there are just some legitimate first ballot guys. You know, I mean, when Brett Favre is up for induction next year, all his presenter has to do is stand up and say, ladies and gentlemen, Brett Favre, and then mm-hmm. sit back down. You know, why waste time with the balloting? But Terrell Owens is going to be a very derisive figure mm-hmm. in that room. That's going to be one that we go on and on about. Ken Stabler is going to be an interesting guy because he's been snubbed from the Hall, but, you know, now being recognized, I don't think there's enough quarterbacks in the Hall. I mean, for a long time, it was becoming the Hall of Linemen. I'm just tired of offensive linemen. Not to knock the position, but the reality is it's such a rote position compared to what is required to play a quarterback. So I'm excited to see these QBs come in. Kurt Warner's going to be up. We got like four Rams from the Dick Vermeil, the you know, Mike Martz, mm-hmm. a greatest show on turf coming up. So that's going to be curious. But yeah, and of course, it's just the greatest honor in the world. And you know, just once you get in, you can just tell what it means to these individuals, and it's really, you know, a lot of positive stuff about a sport that clearly has taken a lot of abuse. The war on football is real, I guess, right?
You know, one of the things that you do, because you've done all of this, but I have to, you do the Sirius XM. Was that a hard thing for you to do, or was it just easy to sit down and do it when you do the Sirius XM now?
I am so blessed, Fabulous Sports Babe. Trust me. What Sirius XM, you know, I worked my way up to, you know, being an occasional co-host to now hosting a show. We do Gil Brandt. We have Bill Poley and Mark Dominic. And I worked with a whole bunch of great hosts.
Well, you also have my old guy in Booger there.
Oh, Booger's fantastic. When I get to work with him, he is wonderful and doing a great job, obviously, on SEC Network as well. But, no, and you know, the great part about it is that it's all football. So, you know, it's a pretty hardcore audience. They're very loyal. And it requires me to, quite honestly, stay on my toes. I mean, I need to monitor the NFL pretty much 24/7 to have some talking points because the callers there are just so darn sharp.
Right.
You know, they know their sport, they know their team, and they want legitimate answers, and you can't BS them, and you shouldn't BS them. You know, it's a paid service, quite honestly. It's Sirius XM, you know?
Right.
I mean, this is part of the subscription package. So I consider it a real honor. I love doing it. I love having the guests, too, and I love the fact that so many people in the NFL listen to it. I mean, you'd be amazed at how many coaches, general managers, people in the NFL front office, you know, if they're driving home from work at night or they're hearing the replay first thing in the morning, how many people listen when I'm on 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern time, Monday to Friday.
I love Gil Brandt.
The best.
That's all I can say. I just love him. He's been around forever, and anything he says, I just stand there and listen. Whatever he has to say, it's fine with me.
Oh, he's the best. You know, he is the most popular host on Sirius XM NFL Radio. I mean, look, we got some great ones. You know, we got Pat Kerwin, we got Rich Gannon, we got Jim Miller. I mean, trust me, we've got, you know, cachet upon cachet of NFL greats, but, man, it's the Godfather. He lights up the lines, and you know what? He is so active. Fabulous Sports Trip. I talk to the Godfather 4 or 5 times a day. Always call me. What's going on? Here's what I hear. What do you hear? You know, he doesn't even share everything. You know what I mean? I mean, he's also a walking encyclopedia of the NFL. I mean, he has a photographic memory, literally, and he's, you know, he's a historian. You know, when you have a question about the 1965 draft, who do you turn to? You turn to Gil Brandt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you have a question about how were the Cowboys formed, you turn to Gil Brandt. You know, and he's been such an incredible resource, and the man is not slowing down one step. He is just on the go from head to toe all the time. It's just a true joy, and he's a dear, dear friend to me. Love the man to death.
Now, is it true that you used to do wrestling? Is that true?
I did cover pro wrestling for 23 years.
23 years? Tell me more. Because I was like, wrestling? Oh, no, I like him even better right now. Go ahead.
Well, but Fabulous Sports Wave, you know, it's a different world now. The pro wrestling world is so, yeah, it's different from when we were both growing up. And you know, and that's really my passion for it. You know, I began writing a column when I just left high school back in 1989. So I got involved in the backstage working of pro wrestling. I got to know who Dave Meltzer was with the Wrestling Observer newsletter. I was hooked from the first time I read my first Observer in March 2nd of 1987 to today when I have a whole stack of them sitting next to me as I speak to you. And, you know, so, I mean, I followed the business. I wrote about it. I was able to live a lot of it, you know, by going on the road with some of these guys, going behind the scenes, you know, wrote a pro wrestling training guide with Ricky Steamboat and Harley Race, I mean, which was really neat to just find out how the moves are done, things like that, and cover the industry. But, you know, once Vince McMahon really took over, there was never any other competition, and what was presented on television changed. Basically, at that point, I just lost interest. The stuff I watch now, there's a great show on Access TV on Friday night's New Japan Pro Wrestling, where it's hard-hitting wrestling, great personalities, great announcing. It's in English. And I just think it's absolutely fantastic. That keeps my interest in it, and I follow the industry because so much of what happens in pro wrestling oftentimes becomes part of real life. You know, I mean, take a look at WWE offering their own network and eschewing the pay-per-view business. Mm-hmm. You're going to eventually see more and more networks that have something to offer a niche product try to do the exact same thing to capitalize on their product, on the money that they can make. You look at the rise of the anti-hero, you know, the Stone Cold Steve Austins, The Rock. I mean, and how that mirrors society. I mean, it's fascinating to me, the business itself. But I guess maybe I got a little bit too close. You know, once you know how the sausage is made, do you really want to eat a hot dog? And I mean, that's the tough part about covering pro wrestling, because we had so many people die. We know there's so much of a casting couch and so much goofiness backstage that I just got away from really enjoying it as a product. But I think that's why I like the New Japan stuff, because I'm just a fan. I just enjoy the action, and it's really good.
You know, I think one of the sorriest things I ever did was not climb on the top of the turnbuckle and jump off when they told me at WWE that I could have done that, and I should have done it, and I didn't, and it'll always hurt me inside my heart. Do you know what I mean?
I understand. When you look at your life's regrets, right, you're sitting there on your deathbed 70, 80 years from now, and they're asking the Fabulous Sports Babe. They're saying, what is it that you didn't get done in life? And you're going to say, come here. You're going to put your fingers, and you're going to have someone come a little bit closer, and you're going to whisper in their ear, I wanted to jump off the turnbuckle.
Alex, I love it. Can we talk sometime? I love it. It's getting to the playoffs. I love talking to you. Thank you so much. It's been great.
Hey, this is an honor to talk to the Fabulous Sports Babe. Are you kidding me? This is all on me, sister. Trust me. Thank you so much for having me on.
I love talking to Alex. He was very good about all the stuff that's going on in football. We love, love, love football. And you know what? I have to tell you, this is a guy that covered 23 years in wrestling. I gotta love it. You know, I have to tell you, I'll never forget this. Vince McMahon was there, his daughter was there, and they said to me, I want to go up to the turnbuckle, I wanted to climb up the ropes, and I wanted to jump off into somebody else in the wrestling. And you know what? I never did that. And the other thing is, they told me to go down and do the racing down there. What is that, in Orlando or something, where you did the racing, and it was like what's his name? The guy with the hat, Richard Petty. That's who it was. Richard Petty. When was the last time? But anyway, he said, go down there and you can get in these NASCAR things, and you can run around, boom, 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 boom. And I'm sorry that I didn't do that. I think I was so cold in Bristol, Connecticut. I should have gone anywhere at the time. And you know, that one time they had one of those Formula One cars, and this, I will never forget this, I was in the snow, and they had this guy, and I went to get in it, and then I looked at my ass, and then I looked at the car, and there was no way that my ass was going to fit in that car, because then I turned around, I looked at my ass, then I looked down at that little teeny tiny pinkish red thing, and I thought, my ass is never going in there. And it wasn't like, you didn't have to be teeny tiny. You had to be pretty tiny to get in there. So I wasn't able to drive that. All right, I got other things to do. After all, I am, what is this called? Wait a minute. It's the Babe Cast, whatever that means. I'm the Fabulous Sports Babe. Yes.
If you know the Babe at all, you know this show never ends.
Don't believe me, just watch.
Follow her on Twitter at Real Sports Babe and subscribe to the show on iTunes. This is the Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Influence.
Hey guys, it's Tripod, executive producer of the Rohde and Linnelli Show. On our show, the guys talk about sports.
Is it crazy to give a vote or two to Tony Romo?
It would have to be a down year.
Why can't we make the argument that somebody that's out that played a big role the previous season shouldn't be considered the MVP candidate?
And some other stuff.
Even if I got arrested, I would teleport my ass out of jail.
Arrested with stealing things in banks. What's the matter with you?
So be sure to catch us on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.